The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, 19th day of October, 2011. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow is up 18 points. S&P is down about a point and a half. The comp is off by 18. Now, there was big news yesterday afternoon. Let me see. There's Mr. Michael. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Okay. Now, big news yesterday afternoon. This is an hourly chart, and you can see that when the news came out of the bailout, in 1 hour, the market climbed from 1209 to 1230. 1230 happens to be a weekly trading zone. It's also the high that was put in. I should point out a slightly higher high was put in Monday morning on the London Open. Okay, we ticked up to 1230.75. The actual zone up there is 3031. Down here 11.12. Now, what I want to show you is this. I put it on the blog last night, and European bailout news sent the markets higher, blah blah. Now, at the height of the announcement rally, we failed to take out the high put in early Monday morning, and I think that's significant, the fact that we were not able to break that high. There'll be a tweet immediately following this post looking for a decline into tomorrow. that tweet and the tweet from Monday night, those are all still valid. They've not yet triggered. Okay, and I'm going to show you here in just a moment the reason why those haven't triggered. People often ask, can you use the weekly trading zones to trade European bailouts? He said. Okay, the valid question really is this. Can weekly trading zones be used to frame up news-related events? Now, the answer there is a solid yes. Fed meetings, so, I don't know, beige books, any kind of a big report, something that truly could move the markets, because we saw that yesterday, and that hourly candle that I just showed you, okay, we had an 18-point rally here from this zone at 12 to this zone at 30, okay? We talked about this yesterday on the show. People go, well, how do you trade zone to zone? Well, the thing is you have to just put the trade on, okay? You could have looked to confirm this move up any kind of way possible. And let's say you nailed it coming right up out of the zone. Man, you got hot. You got a great entry right there. You know what? By the time this thing got halfway and started to sag a little bit, you're probably going, oh, man, I have 9 points. I think I'm going to take them. So you take your 9. It goes on to do another 9 and complete the zone trade. So do you sit back and go, man, doggone it, I was going to trade zone to zone. Well, you know, you got to work out your own demons. I can't do that for you. Did it move from zone to zone? Yes. Would it have been perhaps difficult to stay in that trade all the way? Yeah. I mean, there was only one little pullback here, but that might have been just enough. I wasn't even in the office at the time this news came out and this rally happened. But had I caught this coming out of here, I'd have been thinking really strongly about, so you know what? That was a 9-point trade in about 9 minutes. Yeah. I don't care if it goes to the moon from here. I'll take 9 and 9 any day. So, and it did go on to complete the move and sell off. Now, we did in fact, as I say, have a tweet that came out on Sunday night. We had a tweet that turned into a 32-point drop on the ES with virtually no drawdown. And we had a 360-point drop on the Dow with virtually no drawdown. Okay. That was Sunday night. Monday night, we put out a couple of tweets, and they never got triggered. The market never sold off far enough to trigger us into those trades. And those would be down here somewhere. Consider selling 1195 stop on the YM, 1175 stop on the ES. And then last night we came back and said we would like to consider selling 1209 stop on the ES and 11458 on the YM. And the deal is price never broke below. See, I wanted to see a break below this area to get triggered in to potentially take me back for a test of these lows. Now, we may get that in today's sessions. The markets are heavy. Now, this is what I find interesting about this setup. This is a one-hour candle. Okay. Since the one-hour bailout rally, okay, how many hours have passed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 hours, if my math's correct. All inside. Okay, we hear about inside days where today's trading action is inside of the high and low of yesterday's trading action. What we're talking about here is that all of this action is inside a one-hour candle. Okay? The fact that this high could not break that high, and the fact that this high, okay, we've got a lower high, and then yet a lower high, and we're pressing the downside. If we push through this 12-11 weekly trading zone here, then that will potentially trigger in the tweets from last night. And if the market continues to drop, it will trigger in the tweets from Monday night. As of yet, they sit there. I mean, you might still be watching them. You might have just forgot about them by now. Who knows? But they're still there and they're still valid, because the tweets were made off of a bigger picture time frame. And so this downside action down here, none of that's changed. All that happened is we ran up here. We failed to put in a new high. And so anything to the downside that I was looking at on Monday night or on last night up here, that's all still good to go. So that's about all I got, Michael. Let me give you the mic. Let me give you the charts, and you can run us through the morning session in the live trading room. A reminder for those of you who have not taken the free trial, you need to go to CFRN. Good Lord, what was that? Okay, we don't know what that was. That was just a random sound effect. Okay. All right. If you haven't taken the free trial, here's what you should do. You should go to cfrn.net/iPad. That's right, I-P-A-D. Because not only will you be able to take advantage of the free trial, you'll also be entered to win an iPad 2. And by the way, I'll talk about it later in the show. I did upgrade my iOS to 5 last night on my iPad and my iPhone, and pretty cool stuff. I'll talk with Dave about that when he comes on, since he is running iOS 5. Now, again, cfrn.net/iPad. That gets you a free trial. That also gets you an entry into the drawing. If you refer a friend to take the free trial, then you want that friend to go to the iPad page so that they can put your name in there. Not only does your friend get a entry into the iPad 2 drawing, but because you referred him and he put your name in the little box, you too will get an entry. In fact, since I still have the charts, don't I?
Yes, you do.
Yes, I do.
So far. So yes, far. You do.
See, there you go right there. CFRN.net/iPad. Okay. And it's all right there. Now, some people are highly suspicious of people that want to give away stuff. Oh, yeah, well, there's a catch. Yeah, I'm a little afraid of that. Okay, that's no problem. You can go old school. Just go CFRN.net/apply. And you can take the free trial and not win an iPad. Okay? That's entirely up to you. Okay, let's see, what else? Oh, if you're already on the free trial, if you've already taken the free trial, you're ready to become a partner. Today is Wednesday. Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, is the CFRN Partners Meeting. Okay, that is where we unveil, reveal, roll out all the cool, interesting, highly technical, and top secret stuff that we can't talk about publicly on this radio program. We save that for the partners. If you're interested in learning more about becoming a partner, send an email to support@cfrn.net. If you have a specific question for Michael, you can reach him, tech@cfrn.net. That's tech@cfrn.net. If you need to get your platform downloaded and your indicators installed for your free trial, call Bert or Leslie at 866-928-3310. That's 866-928-3310. And Michael, now you really can't have the charts and you really can't have the microphone.
All right. I will really take the charts first.
And yes, guys, I am test driving the newest version of the Opera browser. That's what you saw up on my screen there. It's pretty fast. Try it. You might like it.
All right. There, so you guys should now be seeing my charts. Alright, you are. That's all good. Alright. You see Gary's comment there, Dwayne,
yeah,
about you being garbled. It was garbled to me, too. It was,
really?
Well, I know some of it was dramatic pauses, but but it seemed like it was almost delayed as much as garbled.
Well, at one point, it sounded like you were taking a shower. But like,
yeah,
with,
that's
with
usually
a,
what happens
a,
when...
But like with a fire hose kind of a deal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not usually what happens on my end. That usually, well, that's usually what I hear, not what I sound like, as far as I know, anyway. But, all right.
Life goes on.
That's it. That's it. I'm gonna get cracking here. All right. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Wednesday, the 19th of October, 2011. We'll go over the morning's trades here and the options trades as well. All right. Not going to tell you what the options were, but not yet anyway. We'll go over the morning's trades. All right. Let me start out by saying how we ended the morning. Plus 3 ticks on the ES and plus 17 ticks, sorry, on the YM. All right. Plus 3 on the ES and 17 on the YM. There is a YM trade happening right now, okay, though I wouldn't have taken that because of the momentum that this pulled up here with. There's also an ES trade. Is that right? ES trade? No, there's not an ES trade happening right now. The first pullback was up here. There was an ES trade right here. But let's just go back here to the morning session, and we'll go through the trades we actually took, okay? Let's see, the first trade of the day was right here. We had a bubble outside the bands. That means the red ones went outside the black ones down here on the chop bands. All right, we did that. Then we had a pull back up to the BBC. The BBC was outside the box. The box is delineated by these lines right here and this dotted line right there. All right, we wait for the BBC to drop down below the box, and usually the pull back down to the BBC or up to the BBC when you have a bubble is good. I took a point on this one. You know, I moved my stop up to break even, and then it was having trouble down here moving further. So I just took a point out of the trade, and it moved back up here. The BBC went back inside the box, and then it stayed inside the box over here as price moved around. If you were doing George's trade, this was one of them right here, but I waited for it to come out of the box. Right here, we had a little tiny bubble right here. All right, so I went short right here, and it stopped me out just by a couple of ticks. It stopped me out, and then it moved on down to the profit target. So I lost. I was plus 4, and I lost 8 right here, so I was minus 4. Then over here, I slipped when I was putting a trade on, and I lost 1 tick out of that, so I was minus 5 before this trade right here. But you can see the BBC made it outside the box. We had a higher swing right there. It pulled back down to the BBC, and I went long right here. 4, 8 ticks, putting me at plus 3. Price pulled down again right here with a fresh bubble that just came outside right here, outside the bands. Price pulled down. I got long here again. Once we got a point, 5 ticks in the trade, I moved my stop up to break even, and it took me out of break even. That was all I did for trading this morning on the ES. That put me at plus 3. All right. I don't believe there were any other trades in there other than this one right here that I missed. There were some over the break, I guess. Yeah, there's a trade right here over the break. Nothing in there. There's one right here that would have been a break even. So there were no trades that would have made any money for me except for this one right here. Okay, this one right here would have made 2 points. And that was the ES on the morning. All right. So we ended the morning session at plus 3 on the ES. Okay. Now the YM. We didn't take a ton of trades on the YM either. We were around this zone right here most of the morning session. So we weren't trading anything over here. Finally, we got away from it. What was it? 10:12, quarter after 10 or so. market moved up pretty strongly here and it pulled back down. This was the first pullback to the BBC after the bullish cross. And we went long right there. And we wanted to get out of it right here at the MA1 because we thought we'd get rejected from the MA1, which we did. So we got our points right there. Between there and there, we got our points. All right. I didn't take any more of these trades in here. Over here, we had a bearish cross and price moved up here. I did not take this trade right here. I missed it, but some of the guys in the room asked about it. And I said it was a trade, but I wasn't going to take it. It was right at 11:24. We're shutting down the morning session. We're getting ready to shut down the morning session. And when we have a huge bar like this one that's coming up to the entry, I don't like to take those trades because a lot of times that momentum is just going to keep going right through. And it did right there. And you know, you can see right here, this one, I only risked 7 ticks on these trades. So I don't have a lot of risk. I don't have a lot of risk. I don't have a lot of room for error. So I like to see it slowly get up there and then bounce off it. In any case, we ended the morning session at plus 17 on the YM. Okay, so plus 17 on the YM, plus 3 on the ES. Now, the options yesterday at about 3:45 Eastern Time, PM Eastern Time, we sent out an email for our partners, our active partners, to buy some options, or to, you know, suggested that they look to buy some options. I'm not going to give out what those options, what price level they were at, or anything like that until the market has moved well off of where it is, one way or the other. But I will tell you that they're profitable right now, and that went out yesterday, and they were up as much as 10%, I think, overnight. Yeah, that's about right. I think 10% overnight is as high as they climbed. Right now, I would like to see price move up above 1230. If we get up above 1230, we'll probably shoot right up to 1240, and then those options will be worth a lot more. You know, I'm looking to see 50% to 100% gain on it if we can. We'll see what kind of opportunities we get here. What kind of opportunities the markets give us, anyway. All right. And that is the morning session. All right. The recording is over, and now I can answer any questions you guys might have. The trend line on 10,000 tops bottoms from Wednesday, Dwayne Stone picked up Richard. Okay. And the rest of it was all about the audio.
Okay, yeah, you weren't garbled this. There, you were just mumbling.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I tend to do that. I get lectured about that almost daily.
Okey-doke. All right.
I thought I was speaking pretty clearly.
No, just right at the end there when you were reading the question.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. That's because I wasn't really focused on it because I was saving the recording and all that business. Sorry, I was distracted. That's what I'm trying to say. But right now I'm okay. All right. I want to point out over here, guys, this was a huge bar that pulled up here. And I said I don't like those because a lot of times it's going to shoot right through it. Look at this bar right here. Just shot right through it. And that happens quite often. These trend lines you guys see in here on the 10K, I drew these in a while back. You know, back here somewhere. I drew them in when we were in this triangle right up here. I had drawn in these trend lines, and I figured if we broke the downside of this, we would move down to this trend line. And if we broke the upside, we would move up to the 1230 area first. We never broke the upside. We broke the downside of the triangle that I had drawn in there, and we made it almost down to this trend line. But we're still stuck in this larger area here. Now, we have the beige book coming out this afternoon. I don't remember what time exactly. I think it's at 2 o'clock the beige book comes out. And in the past, the market, on days the beige book came out, the market reacted as though it prior to the Beige Book coming out, it reacted as though it were like an FOMC day, you know, where there was just a bunch of consolidation. A bunch of people sitting on their hands and waiting is what it seemed like. Now, as far as the DOMs go, there's, you know, it seems like there's plenty of orders hanging around everywhere. So it seems like there's plenty of buyers and sellers, and people in the market, you know.
You still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
you hear my little distraction? but right here, we don't have anything right here on the ES because we're inside the box over here. Over here, we had a pullback up to the BBC right here on the 10K, but the cycle's not in favor of a short trade there. Now, right here, we'll see. As we approach the actual Beige Book coming out, if you guys look at your DOMs down here, you'll see these numbers drop way down. Okay, that'll be the people taking their orders off. Everybody that's got orders lined up on there, they'll be taking them all off, and you'll see that that drop down quite a bit. Yeah. He's counting the minutes to lunch right now, Bert. that's what he just came in and lectured me. All right, does anyone have any questions? Any more questions about anything? I am more than happy to cover it right now. Anybody that's in the calls that we put on yesterday, right now, 30-minute closes down below, or actually any closes, down below 12, 11.5 would indicate a position where you might want to consider liquidating those, okay? Getting out of the calls. And that is pretty much it. We did have one other thing we looked at this morning. I'll point it out here for you. On the Russell, there was one trade that we actually pointed out when it was happening this morning on the Russell, but right here, there was a pullback right here. That was good for 10 ticks. The next actual entry after that one, for those of you who were watching this, would have been right over here along for another 10, and the next one after that would have been right here, the short, for another 10. And it's actually looking like it's trying to put together another long right here at 704.40, possibly. Okay, that's what we had for the Russell. Now I'll just jump over to the 6E, and just so everybody gets to see everything, on the 6E, though we didn't trade the 6E this morning, we looked at it briefly. Now, we do have partners that are in the room every day that do like to trade the 6E pretty actively. I'm just going to scroll back to when the 6E is more active. You know, not necessarily in our time frame, but in, back here, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning for me. What you're looking for on the 6E is just divergence, okay? Divergence and pullback to the BBC is what these guys are doing for the most part. All right, price underneath it, a pullback to the BBC. Divergence down here on the combo indicator. The combo indicator by itself is what we're talking about, and this is what I mean by divergence. With the cycle indicator down on the bottom and these indicators on the top, price pulls back up to the BBC, you sell it with a 6-tick bracket. It flips around right here, for instance. A 6-tick bracket on that one would have been 75 up to 79, so that wouldn't have worked out. You would have lost that one. Right over here, that would have been okay. Right there. I'm just scrolling through. I didn't do anything with this today, but I know that we do have guys who did or who do things with this. Yeah, nothing there. All right, right in here. It was good for another six. Now, six ticks on the 6E is worth a point and a half. It's equivalent to six ticks on the ES, for those of you who don't know. And that pretty much brings it current. The 6E right now is pretty much done for the day. So we'll move away from that back over here to the ES. All right. There. That was our morning.
So did you want me to go back to gargling now?
I don't know. I don't know. It worked fine all morning in the morning session for you. Yeah, you sounded fine all morning.
And I don't sound fine now.
Well, right now you do.
Of course I do.
But when we first started up, it was garbled up a little bit.
Alrighty then.
I want to take this moment again to remind you, as Dwayne already did, partners meeting tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. They usually last, you know, at least an hour, usually much more than that. And a lot of good information comes out. So if you're on a trial and you're thinking about becoming a partner, you should really pull the trigger before tomorrow night. Give us a call, send an email to support@cfrn.net. support@cfrn.net. I assume that gets forwarded to me. Yep. And we'll tell you what kind of a deal we have for you between, you know, now and tomorrow night if you become a partner. All right, we'll give you a discount between now and tomorrow night. And that is that. Any questions by anyone? All right. It's not looking like there's any questions. You stopped out on that Wrestle 1, Bob. Hang on. Let me bring it up.
Nope. I just stole your screen, I think.
Oh, okay. Yep, you did. I can still bring it up. Yeah. Yeah, from 4.8, it just dropped all the way down to 3.4. So, yeah, that would have been a stop out.
Yeah, I didn't know you were going to bring it up, or I would have.
No, that's okay.
Behave differently. All right, time to go talk to Mr. Williams. You know, sometimes you just got to show off your photos. This was day one of the wedding, and so it begins. It was a 3-day process. Overlooking the river, not a very good picture, but it's only a telephone. I mean, what do you expect? This one never really came out. Oh, there it is. Don't you hate it when people tweet their food? You know, I only did it as a statement because I see it on Facebook all the time, and I don't know why people do that. Every family has one. Ours is named Dave. There he is, Dave. Now, that's not a beer in his hand. Dave's actually a preacher, but he's a wild man. that's the newest addition to our family right there. That's Emily.
Very nice.
This is where the wedding actually took place. A little pond in front of these people's house with this little dock that goes out. Really a nice setting. And that's my son, appropriately bored. Looking fly in his hat. Fly. I don't think they use fly anymore. They use something different. And this is my Uncle Bill. On my wife's side, Uncle Bill. Uncle Bill was a Phoenix police officer for like a million years. And they finally asked him to leave the force for excessive use of force. He's quite a character, man. I always get to see him at the family reunion. Just look at that man's been through some stuff. Phoenix cop, 30 years. He's seen it all. And there's the groom. And there's both of my kids. I did all that just to get to this picture.
Very nice.
My wife got him a little suit. That's actually my hat, so it's a little big for his head. See his ears kind of folding down. Son, you got to tuck your ears up. And so that was a constant battle all night, tucking his ears up. But there's my date. And the bride and groom's first dance. And do you smell toast? That's a joke. Let them eat cake. Time for me to electric slide on out of here. All the girls doing the electric slide. I don't do that. And this is my wife and all her sisters. There's seven of them.
Wow.
Wow.
That is a bunch.
And that leads us into a 360-point drop on the Dow. And a 32-point drop on the ES. And so that ends today's photojournalism session, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. We're going to pause for a station identification. Go to Mr. David Williams out there in Las Vegas, Nevada.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310 and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
David, good morning to you, sir, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Michael, as well.
Good morning, David.
Mm-hmm. Don't leave Jake out.
Good morning, okay. Jake.
Yeah, he's around here somewhere. He's busy.
I'm busy as well.
Right here. Yes.
If he's looking for me, say he's busy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Let him know I'm busy.
I will certainly let him know.
Okay, David, the world has... Oh, go ahead.
7.5.
Oh, it's a beautiful time.
Yes.
A lot less complex in that time of your life, isn't it? The
yes.
Just seem to get to grow, don't they?
They do. They do. Especially once you have a Jake. Things seem to get complicated.
Yeah. But just the ability to have a Jake is a complex matter.
It is. It is. That... in its own.
Anyway,
on to the markets.
All right. Let's march over to the markets. No, that's fine. What were you going to say, Dwayne?
I was going to say, we had the discussion yesterday about could a man with an iPhone 3GS actually upgrade to iOS 5? And
yes.
The good news is that he can.
Yes.
And here's what's really interesting is I was doing the upgrade on my desktop, and in the middle of the night, somehow it had a hiccup, and so when I came in this morning, my phone simply said failed to restore, which typically, that's not good. And so I tried, hard rebooting the phone a couple times, and it just kept going back to that screen that said failed to restore, and I'm like, oh, man. So then I plugged it into my laptop, and it said, this phone needs to be restored. I was like, okay. And I said, now, if I hit click, it says we're going to restore it to its factory default settings. I was like, gee. There go the contacts, the emails, the everything, however, because at the beginning of the process on the other computer.
Yeah, it takes all that out. It takes all that stuff out and stores it.
Well, yeah, but it puts it in the cloud. See, back in the day, it would only be stored on the hard drive of this other computer.
Right. Under iTunes, right.
Yeah, but on a completely different computer, I said, okay, go ahead, restore it. And it snatched everything out of the cloud, down to every song, every podcast, every text message I've ever sent, every voicemail I have waiting. I mean, it's all
that is beautiful.
There. And that is really cool and really kind of freaky. Because if people have to think about the privacy issue here, not to say that, you know, the government and Big Brother, whoever he is, and Apple didn't always have access to your data when it was just sitting on your phone or on your computer, but they really do have your data now. So, if you send a text message to somebody that's, you know, a little off color, just know that that could come back to haunt you someday, okay? And any other thing that you, I mean, there, you know, they used to say what people do behind closed doors is their own business, kind of a thing. You know, they really, there's very few closed doors in this world in which we live today.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go to London, you cannot stand anywhere in London and not be on camera.
Mm-hmm. Well, on top of that, Dwayne, they now have, I forgot the name of it, but it's a way of knowing your license plate. There are special cameras that they're putting up in cities that can read your license plate. And with that information, you'd think, well, they would know who you are. But in reality, a number of computers could put that information together and simply track your motion every single day. Because they're taking pictures, and this is happening in America here. We already have traffic cameras, you know that, and but for the purpose of either monitoring traffic or giving tickets, which in your state of Arizona didn't work out so well, now did it?
Well, the state made a ton of money off of it, but the people revolted, and they've now turned them off.
Actually, the state lost money on it, as I understand. The money they thought they were going to make on it, they were taking in actually about 30% of what they thought they were going to make. The original assessments, of course, probably from the company that makes the camera equipment that installs it and participates in the revenue stream, they had very high expectations, but lots and lots and lots of tickets get thrown out, not from the court. They get thrown out before they're even sent to you. And then secondary, because of any number of reasons, the camera, there was glare, any number of things that would stop them from being able to completely nail you. And then there was that other pesky little problem, which is that the way the legal system is set up right now, when somebody writes you a ticket, when a policeman writes you a ticket and you sign it, that signing of it right then and there is a legal act where you're acknowledging that you've been cited for this. And when you get a traffic ticket that is done by a camera, that acknowledgement never occurs. They send it to you the same way they send you advertisements for Viagra.
Yeah, I got like five of them in a drawer over here.
And you don't, if you respond to it and call them, then that is you acknowledging.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But if you do nothing with it, then they can't do anything to you. And everyone that got out, that piece of information got out, and a lot of people didn't pay their tickets. So on top of the fact that they had to throw away a lot of tickets, which they were unable to process for one reason or another. Secondarily, when they sent them out to people, initially people were paying them, but then later it got out that you don't have to really pay them at all. And this is true from what I understand. You might want to check your local area.
Well, I just did
every
a Google
state in America.
I just did a Google, and they did. It was a money losing.
Yes.
Because I can't imagine what each one of those cameras cost. I mean, they're pretty sophisticated.
Well, it's money losing, though, not because the expenses were so high. The money losing was because there wasn't enough just straight-up revenue coming in. The people were not paying their tickets, and there was too many tickets that had to be thrown out before they were processed. If you ever got one of those, and, you know, I drive to Arizona or used to drive to Arizona very often, and I hate to say this on the radio, but, you know, I got my fair share of speeding tickets, not because I'm a wild driver, but because you're out on the open road. It's
right.
Very easy to get up to above 55 miles an hour,
right.
You know, driving on the open road. And in Arizona, they have 75 mile an hour speed limits, which is very nice. But really, if you have any kind of vehicle that's relatively new, it does, you know, 85 or 90 miles an hour very, very easily and very comfortably. You feel very safe in it. And they'll often write you a warning for that, but and then you need a radar detector, et cetera. But bottom line is I had a number of tickets, and the majority of them that I got were from traffic cameras in the state of Arizona on the highway. And so that's where I got nailed. And so when you get that packet, it has all the information in there. They show your face. They show the front of the car. They show the back of the car. They show when the last time your oil was changed. They, you know, every little thing is shown to show you that you've been nailed.
Yep.
And their bet was that when you see that you've been nailed, you're going to pay.
Right.
But they didn't realize that, you know, it's going to get out. Attorneys are going to tell people, no, you don't have to pay that. So that legal acknowledgement that when you sign that ticket, that's not there. And the only way they can get around that is by serving you or by sending it with, what's it called when you sign for your mail?
Registered.
Where you have to sign for it. If you sign for it, then you've agreed, you've taken notice, you've been put on notice, and the ticket's yours now, and now you do have to pay it. But I didn't pay any of them. I'm sorry, the state of Arizona. And they never came after me. And not only did they not come after me, but when I was pulled over at another time, many, many months after these would have already gone to warrant, there were no warrants out.
I was just going to say, so, David, I got my first speeding ticket from a real police officer for the first time in 30 years about a month ago.
Yeah, well, when you're driving a town and country, they're not really on you.
No, I was in my truck that day. I was hot-dogging
okay.
it. So I have several of those traffic cam things in my drawer over here. And I was one of those people who listened to talk radio and believed in the constitutional thing that, you know, I really don't have to pay that because I believed that they had erred and that the law was on my side, and so I didn't think I was defying the law. I thought I was actually within my legal rights not to pay it. And so I chose
not
to. That's
interesting. Now, without the knowledge that the attorneys would tell you that they didn't give you proper notice by having you sign it. That's pretty astute, because I had to go check to find out that, you know, that's the case, and
well,
all of Arizona knows that's the case.
I heard it on talk radio. Anyway, when I actually did. For the first time in 30 years, I get pulled over by a police officer who said, "Sir, do you know how fast you're going?" And I go, "Well, obviously faster than the speed limit because you pulled me over." He goes, "Well, what's going on?" I go, "Well, I got impatient. The guy in front of me was going so slow that I decided to pass him. And then I suddenly saw why he was going so slow, because you were sitting there with a gun." And anyway, at that point, I thought, wow, is he going to come back and tell me, "You have like 5 unpaid, you know, speeding tickets from these cams." But like you just said, I mean, he went back, ran me, did the deal, whatever they do. And he came back and he says, "I'm sorry, but, you know, I got to write you these tickets." And I said, "Okay, you know, I was speeding.
Yeah.
You got to write me a ticket." Okay. And so.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. They can't give you a warrant for something that you never were put notice for. So the next legal procedure, the next step of going to warrant isn't possible. That's why none of those go to warrant, and that's why when I was pulled over there. So that's why it died. They still have, by the way, from what I understand in Arizona, they still may have the freeway traffic cams up, and they still may be doing that. But I think either the ones on the street near the university are still up, and they took the freeway down, or the other way around or something.
The freeway ones are shut off. I haven't seen one of those things go off in ages.
Okay. Well, maybe all gone. And listen, having said all that, I think they're a great idea, because policemen can be doing much more important things once they get it solved. I'm not so against having, me personally anyway, about having a traffic ticket that's generated by me speeding, but at the same, by, you know, not being seen by a police officer, but just by a machine. But then that starts the slippery slope, doesn't it? That before you know it, our cars have chips in it, and then the road is reading your car speed, and, you know, and it just goes on and on and on as another method to, you know, get money out of you. So it's a shakedown, you know. But either way, we do have to have people drive safely, and speeding tickets do slow people down. So there's something good in it. I'm not sure exactly what it is. But it's not too bad. I would rather have policemen going out getting the real criminals rather than, you know, having so many of them dedicated to the highway. If we could do that, that's just my personal opinion. And listen, about the cloud, I mean, if you ever wanted to freak out the conspiracy people and really put the fire on, you do it with the cloud. And the only way the cloud gets into our lives is that people realize that they need it. because computers have become so prevalent and nobody's doing backups, and you know, they have backup services and other things like that, but on an iPhone or on your phone, whatever it is, and the ability to reload it down from it, it's so convenient to have the cloud. Everyone's agreeing to do it, and you know, but you're going to see those guys, if I haven't been on the internet, but they're going to come crawling out. This is the big conspiracy of all time, to gather all the information from every human being, everything they're doing at all times and places. We joked earlier, you know, a couple of years back, you and I, about the cameras that were supposedly in the little, you know, the thing in your living room to, you know, get a slice of you and be able to know what you're doing. That's nothing compared to the information that they're going to have now on everyone. All of your text messages, all of the emails, anything you send, all that stuff, essentially, one way or the other, is going to be information that they can, or a lot of it is going to be information that they can take a look at. And law enforcement will certainly be using that information one way or the other. They'll be able to go get a subpoena and get that information. And you can better believe it that on any given day, whoever runs and owns the cloud, and I don't know if you know who that is, somebody does, who runs the cloud? Who owns that? Those are servers. Who owns them? Do you know?
Well, it depends on which cloud you're backing your stuff up to.
Well, let's say it's the cloud for the iPhone. Is that owned by Apple?
Yeah.
Apple?
Mm-hmm. The biggest bank of prior to the iCloud, Amazon had the I forget what it was called. They have a huge server farm. That was, in essence, a cloud. I mean, they started doing cloud music for people. They were trying to front-run the iCloud. So, I mean, what you pose that question as if, are you saying that maybe someone other than Apple owns
No. I'm saying the conspiracy people are going to be saying that is the case.
I see.
And you can rest assured that even if that isn't the case, I believe Apple owns the cloud if that's the case. But the fact is that on any given day, once it really starts working, there's going to be thousands of subpoenas being sent to them on any given day at some point. Because everyone who has an iPhone or everyone who has, there's going to be a bunch of those people that have legal cases or things going on where they're going to want, I don't know about thousands, but whatever it is, a lot of subpoenas are going to be sent to the company that owns and runs the cloud. Because those subpoenas are to get information on criminal cases about that particular person, his location, his this, his that, whatever. God only knows what else is in the cloud.
When you
move from one location to another, you're changing cell sites. Maybe that information is also sent to the cloud. So at some point, you know, this is one of those things where I will totally agree with the conspiracy theorist people that this information is so dense. It has so much information about you and what you're doing, and most likely even where you are at any point in the day, that law enforcement's going to be using that to, yes, solve crimes and do good things, but it leaves the door, it certainly, of course, doesn't it, leave the door open for bad things as well. So, you know, it's something to consider. You don't even need to be a conspiracy theorist to see that the beauty of the cloud is also offset by the danger that there's people that could use that information against you. I do want to say that most conspiracy theorists, people that I've known that are deeply involved, are people who have nothing that anybody would want. They have nothing sometimes at all. I mean, they're basically, you know, they have nothing, no assets. And they're the most worried people about the government getting into their stuff. But they don't have any stuff.
Well, there's,
but at the
all,
same
those
time,
of, there's all those stacks of newspapers. That you have to,
there are the stacks of
newspaper,
yeah, with the circle, the things that are circled, proving that their conspiracy
with
was correct.
Sitting up on top, things people need to know about this iOS 5, and I think this is important. And there's a thing in there called PhotoStream, which means every picture that you snap, good, bad, ugly, accidental, your spouse is playing a joke because you look funny coming out of the shower. Once that shutter is clicked, that picture goes to the cloud. That picture goes to every other iOS connected device that you have. This is just a word of caution. Not because you take naughty pictures or anything. The photo stream part of iOS 5, you're able to turn that off. In fact, you actually have to turn it on. And I'm just cautioning you that I don't really think you ever want to turn that on. Because if you're just out taking pictures at a picnic, okay, fine. Well, you may take 20 pictures and 5 of them turn out really good. The problem with this photo stream thing is it's going to send all 20 of them to the cloud. And now, get this. Hello. You're not going to believe me when I tell you this. You're going to have to go Google it. You're going to have to go listen to somebody smarter than me before you believe it. Once it's there, you can't delete it. There's no delete button. I know. Nobody. Oh, that's a conspiracy.
See, that's just no fun. That is just no fun.
Google me out, guys. There's no delete button. Once that photo uploads to the cloud, now they may come out with a patch, a fix, a something, because people are going to, like, I don't know. But I'm just telling you that's how it is right now today. So be careful, you know?
Right. And further, remember that even when something is deleted from your computer, a forensic computer guy can come in and in many, many cases, yep, he can get it back. What do you think about in the cloud? When you say delete and it's no longer supposedly on their server, do you not think that a forensic guy can go in there and kind of go get that photo?
Yep.
I'm thinking he probably can.
Yep.
So you do want to be careful. That's a great thing to point out, Duane, because, you know, this stuff, you just have to be careful with it. Your information is private. And for the most part, the odds of you being important enough for people to want to chase you down, that's another thing about conspiracy people, is they think they're the most important people in the world and everybody wants what they have when most of them have nothing. And but many of their points are very valid. Well, I am going
most
on their
side. Most
of them
have a monthly bus pass.
Right. You know, I'm on their side in this case. This is something that will be abused. This is something that's going to make a great addition to your ability to move data around very easily, but it also leaves that data open for others to view, law enforcement and others. And that could be a very good thing, but you ought to think about what it is carefully that you want to have out there, because, and you may not even want to use the cloud, because I think you can turn that feature off as well.
You can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you might want to consider that as well. So there's some things to think about there. By the way,
What's really cool,
the other day, I did. I'm sorry.
I just got to say this with the iPad, because, you know, I told the story when I got the iPad. My wife bought it for me for Christmas. She bought it from a little old lady in Sun City. And she paid $900 for it, but the reason she paid the little extra for it, even though it's a first generation, is because it came with the unlimited data plan. Which you can no longer get.
Yeah,
so
right.
I have unlimited data for $29.95 a month on the iPad, and that in itself is just huge. I mean,
huge.
I've already made back my $900 that she spent on the thing as a Christmas gift in data fees, so it's a beautiful thing. But when I upgraded last night to iOS 5, it took me to something that may have been in the old operating system, but I didn't never noticed it before. When I opened up the App Store, there was a little button down there that said Purchased, and I go, I don't recall seeing that before. So I hit Purchased, and it brought up 172 apps that the people who owned it before me
had
bought. And I was like, seriously? That's not supposed to. And so I went through all of them that were of any interest to me, and boom, 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 put them right onto my iPad.
Wow.
You know, USA Today, Time Magazine, I mean, all kinds of stuff. Stuff that I would not have
the
bought.
The data trail is everywhere. Yeah. That's the thing.
Okay.
So...
All right,
be ready
on
for the new world. It's a brave new world. It's just that your data is everywhere.
It is.
So, remember that, what was it, Star Trek, that had the guy's name as Data?
Yep.
Yeah, well, that's starting to look a little more
realistic. Spock had
realistic
a tablet,
now.
You know, 25 years ago, right?
Didn't he? Yeah. He did. And then Data had was Data the guy with the, you know, the 1967... air cleaner around his head, whatever that thing for a car looked like he was wearing, an air filter.
I never was a fan of that. I didn't watch that show.
I didn't either, but somebody would know.
Somebody does.
I always thought that was interesting. Anyway, well, I don't know, it's a market show. We could comment on the market as well. Okay, well, we're in, you know, yesterday. We talked a little bit about this yesterday. This week is the on-time week for a top against a larger monthly bottom that we had talked about a couple of months back for the month of September to mark a bottom. The bottom actually came about 8 points lower 1 month late in the month of October, and that's the 1 month late, and that prompted a very powerful reversal and this rally that we see here. A lot of people have had trouble with this rally, a lot of traders, and I speak to a number of traders, and some of them are very skilled traders, and some of them are skilled or less skilled, but they still know what they're doing. And many of them have trouble with this rally. The reason they've had trouble with this rally is because it's so powerful, so fast, and it doesn't stop. And everything becomes overbought, and everything looks like it needs to go down, and people are screaming, you know, sell, and the thing just keeps going up. When you have a monthly bottom, like we did, the market's going to advance 2 to 3 months off that bottom. So if you know that information, then you would potentially want to be buying pullbacks on the way up. Fair enough, whatever those pullbacks are. Whether they're larger pullbacks that later come on the daily or even weekly chart, or smaller pullbacks inside the current uptrend. The fact is that you should be looking for the market to continue to advance for some period of time. Even if we have a reaction and pullback and all that, which ultimately under normal conditions, of course, we will. But this has been troublesome for a number of traders because of the fact that it has proven to be very powerful, and it comes from a larger time frame. And if you're aware of those time frames and what's driving the market, what is in charge of the market, you would be much less apt to be placing large positions against that trend. And that's one of the things that Reflected Wave does for you, is it shows you the difference between your indicator. This is, has nothing to do with Dwayne's and Michael's stuff, but the ordinary idea of overbought and oversold, because the market isn't being driven by that same, this is one of the things it takes people a long time to get this through their head, and it took me a long time as well. The market is not being driven by the same force all the time. So your single view of it by looking at your daily or 60-minute overbought, oversold indicator, at some point, something a lot bigger than daily is going to be pushing the market around, and your daily is going to get overbought, and it's going to stay overbought. And it's going to keep going up in spite of the fact that the daily says it's overbought. That's why it's very important for you to understand the difference between the time frames, what is driving the market right now, so that you're not caught on the wrong side. And not only should you not be caught on the wrong side, hopefully you should be on the right side at some point of a move like this, trying to buy it and be in for the larger wave that is certainly underway. So with a monthly bottom, we would expect, as I've forecast several months ago, that the market would bottom in September and then have a multi-month advance. The bigger outlook, though, is that we're not going to be making any new highs for the remainder of the year. That was made with regard to the quarterly forecast for the top, the quarterly top, that we would make a top in the first or second quarter of this year, decline, and that no new highs would be made. That doesn't mean that no new highs can be made next year. And next year is an election year, and seasonality comes into play. There's a four-year business cycle, from what I hear. I don't track cycles in the same way, but you know, you've heard about the four-year business cycle or the four-year election cycle and all that. So I'm pretty sure the market tends to be bullish during an election year, or for some portion of it. Certainly it is. So we certainly could see higher prices into and all the way through next year. So keep that in mind as well, no matter how this rally plays out. So with having said all that, we were expecting this week, the week that we're currently in, to mark a new high from last week. Last week, a lot of people, again, the market looked bearish. There's no question about it, but it really wasn't, because a much larger force, the market by reaching 1,200, indicated that it needed to go higher into this week. And so we did go higher now twice during this week, both going up to 1230, which is a listed level in our support and resistance panel. That level is important, and the market has tested it now twice and has pulled back and still is in a strong position here even as we speak. Earlier this morning, we told our listeners that the bottom that the market's making around 1217, we expect them to rally off of that and attempt another test at 1226 or higher in this time period that we're in now. So we're trying to buy this and have been trying to buy this on the downside here. Our limit order was not quite filled. It came within about a point and a quarter or so of it and hasn't been filled yet. Probably won't be filled. But under normal conditions, we would see a further test or an attempt at 26 a little bit later here. We'll see how the market handles that, and that'll give some information as well about the nature of the current market, you know, how it handles its normal movement. We'll see. So we don't want to be too bearish on a market that has a big force pushing it up for a while here. We are reaching in our work, depending on how they handle this advance on the 1226. Having said everything I've said, we are approaching a critical juncture on the upside for a reaction on the downside. And so that's going to be part of our next setup after this setup gets done, you know, after we do the advance here to the 26 or higher. We'll make a judgment at that point, and we'll be able to see if we can take a short position based on some of this shorter-term stuff that's working, that does indeed has come out at this point to say, well, we need a reaction on the downside. It has nothing to do with overbought or oversold, and nothing is really wrong with overbought and oversold. It's just you can't look at the same stuff every day and expect – it's like looking at the ocean every day and expecting the same waves. It doesn't really work that way. There's high tide, there's low tide, there's no tide, there's tsunamis, there's earthquakes, you know, there's all kinds of things. You can't measure it with the same tool. So that's something for you to consider when you realize that you've, you know, the market keeps going in one direction even though your indicator says it shouldn't. It may not be the fault of the indicator, but the operator, so to speak, because you're not taking into account that there's a larger wave. And this is, again, one of the things that reflected wave does is it gives you a very easy way to detect which time frame is ruling the market. And we talk about that at the reflected wave seminar. And it's a very important concept in what we do because that concept is a huge advancement over staring at one time frame. I think you will agree. Mm-hmm. The market doesn't work on one time frame. It doesn't move up and down on a 5-minute chart. That's not the only business the market's doing. It's got other business, other fish to fry. That's a junior high school statement from a long time ago. Other fish to fry. So keep that in mind and think about that a little bit, because those are ideas that may help you expand outward a little bit your what might be a very narrow view of how the market works. The market is just like life. It comes in all shapes and sizes. And you have to be ready for different shapes and sizes to arrive. You can be wrong, and you can get it wrong and manage your risk, but you can have a lot of high-probability trades if you understand the time frames a little bit better, rather than just looking at one or two that are fixed time frames that you're always watching the market on. And I've said this, Dwayne, have I not said this for years on your program? You know, you ask somebody, oh, I like to trade off the 5-minute charts. Well, you know, I don't think you're making a lot of money. Oh, well, another guy says, well, I only trade off the 60-minute charts. Well, I don't think you're making a lot of money. Well, why is that? That's because if you're looking at any one chart, you don't know about 90% of the information that you need to know. That's why. So, you know, I've been hearing that for years. You know, I trade off the 15-minute chart. I trade off the 1-minute chart. I trade off the 10,000 chart, you know, chart or whatever it is. If it's one chart you're trading off of, I'm not thinking you're doing that well, because you don't have 90% of the information or some large percentage of the information that you should have, you don't have. And you're trying to make decisions based upon indications off of one thing. It would be almost like a person flying through the air in an airplane and trying to make a decision about where he's going to land with only looking at a slice of what's out there, like a little narrow one-inch slice of what's in front of him, and trying to figure out how to land and take off in the airplane. He doesn't know everything that's going on around him. He's not able to make better decisions. And then once he opens up his windscreen and can see, you know, all around him, then he realizes that man was never intended to fly, and he better get back on the down ground. It's really scary up there. But up until that point, he didn't realize how scary it was, because he only saw that little slice.
Yeah, I think most people, you know, eventually, hopefully sooner than later, become aware of the need for multiple time frames, so that, you know, you have that... You have that big view, Okay, which lets you know, you know, because on a small time frame you get tunnel vision, and what looks really important on that, you know, small time frame, when you zoom out to a much bigger time frame, then that thing that looked like it was really big and really important suddenly doesn't seem to, you know, it was a symptom, not a cause of anything. And so you need to get out to a big enough time frame where you can actually see what might be causing it, you know, not just showing up as a symptom.
Right.
So one of whether things, for different people, it's, you know, for different people, that's going to be daily charts, hourly charts, you know, you're going to find what works for you. Just, you know, I think that if you attempt to trade in a vacuum, just repeating what you've said, you know, if you're attempting to trade in a vacuum using only one time frame, you'll have good times, you'll have bad times, but you'll always be mystified about those trades that didn't work out and why.
And right. It'll also be very dusty in that vacuum. I've traded in a vacuum. I've traded in a Hoover 912 upright, and it was very dusty inside there. So completely agree. Please, go ahead.
As long as you stay in that one time frame, whatever that time frame is, the things that don't, that you can't understand, the only way you'll understand why the market behaved in a certain way in that smaller time frame is to go look at some larger time frame. And I'm not going to tell you it should be a 5 minute. If you're trading, you know, on an 89 tick chart, I'm not going to tell you that, well, oh, then you need to look at a 3 minute, or you need to go to a 5 minute, or you need to go to a 10 minute. There's an infinite number of time frames that you can go to. Just find something that you can bounce the two off of each other. Find something where, okay, when this is here, it would just be totally stupid for me to be trying to get short over here on this little bitty time frame. I mean, just something really basic like that. Don't try to make it too complicated. But multiple time frames, very important.
No doubt. No doubt about it. In fact, if I was holding a school for trading, if somebody didn't have at least 2 to 3 different time frames up on their chart, I would send them straight to the principal's office. That's what I'd do. Tom, Steve, Mike, to the principal's office. Go ahead. Because
yes,
that's
Ray,
how important it is.
And Ray asked also multiple indicators. Well, here's the thing about indicators, Ray. Number one, you can trade just price action. Okay, you can trade static support and resistance. And yes, multiple indicators, I believe, are in fact good, but make sure that you don't have 3 indicators on your chart that are all measuring the same thing. And we've talked about that on the show before. Make sure that each of the indicators that you're using are actually doing something different. Yeah, David,
exactly.
You've talked about that at length. You know,
we have. We've talked about it numbers of times.
So that's really important. I mean, don't have, you know, whatever the stochastic is measuring, you know, you can have 2 other things that it may look different. It may make a clucking sound or a chirping noise. But if it's measuring the same thing, then you have 2 things on your screen that look totally different, but they're giving you the exact same information because they're measuring and quantifying the same information, be it price movement, be it volume, be it whatever it is that it's measuring. So make sure that you're looking at something different.
That's right. I mean, I've seen people's screens that look like a 4th of July fireworks show is going off as I'm looking at it with so many indicators and colors. And many, many of those indicators are doing the exact same thing. That is, looking like a 4th of July fireworks show. And they are actually measuring. This is the really serious part. They're measuring the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're measuring the same thing and expressing that measurement in just a slightly different way. And it's that difference is not enough to have a whole separate indicator for in most cases. And so in many cases, when people say, well, I'm looking for extra confirmation by these other indicators, those indicators are the same indicator. So you're going to get confirmation, and you think you're confirming something 3 different ways, and it's the same thing.
Yep.
It's the same guy.
Yep.
So
the same
that's
guy
another
nodding
big one.
His head 3 times.
Right, exactly. So those are some of the things that you know, you want to be careful of, certainly, and get over. But the idea of being able to have a broader view of the market and understand that the thing that is important on the small time frame may not be important right now because a larger time frame is ruling the market. And those time frames are ruled, those are time cycles, so to speak, are what causes time frames to become active. Time frames become active based on time cycles. And reflected wave is the very essence of that behavior going on and being able to track when larger time frames are going to become active. As an example, the monthly bottom in September, 1 month late, well, you're 1 month late, you're now outside of the plus or minus 1 unit of time once October's gone, and the market is going to want to go up either then or during the month of October because you're in the 1 month late. So you don't want to be trying to short that. You might, if you're very skilled, you might be able to catch lots of little short moves on there, but it's a whole lot easier to be on the long side of that wave. And all surprises are almost certainly going to be in the direction of that wave. Why not trade that and stay on top of that game? It's a lot easier to stay on top of that rather than trying to play the trickier game. The market does take longer generally to go up than it does to go down. Not all the time. Down moves are generally faster. They're easier to hold on to. You're paid off quicker. But you have to time it much better. Because the short moves, the fast moves on the downside start very quickly, and they're over usually pretty quickly, relatively speaking. So although the down is easier to hold on to, there's always a balance, there's always a payoff to these things, or a payment that you have to make. The long side is easier to hold on to, but it takes longer, or the long side, I'm sorry, is a little harder to hold on to because it takes longer in many cases for a big move to happen. Not recently, but in most cases, the market creeps and backs and fills and finally gets underway. On the downside, it often gets down to business very quickly. But you have to be better at timing the market and knowing when the cycle is up and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The market's very fair. It really is. It pays you, I know this sounds terrible in some ways, but it pays you exactly what you're worth in terms of your understanding of what market movement's doing. Even people like trend followers, the people who simply they're in their own purity, they're saying, we know nothing, we're just going to follow this trend. We don't know about tops, we don't know about bottoms, we're simply following the trend. They know something, and the market is going to pay them for what they know, what they don't know in a sense. They know they don't know. That's what they know. And so they get paid in the same way that somebody who does know something, everyone kind of, including the trend followers, they all get paid based on what they know. The reason I don't like to say that sometimes is because people go, well, I'm not making any money right now, or I'm not doing very well, so I guess I don't know anything. It's not necessarily true that you don't know anything, but your application of what you know also may be off a little bit. You know, we can have a big barn and we can have a bunch of cans of paint. You own the paint, you understand the paint, but you haven't yet painted the barn. You haven't yet applied what you know properly to the market, and that application comes through practice, of course. Just like Chinese people making really good Mexican food, it takes practice. That's not a joke. There was a place out here that made really good Mexican food. The best Mexican food I've ever had was made by Chinese people.
And she did it by practicing.
Yeah, and she said, I said, how do you do this? She said, practice, practice, practice. And it struck me as I was eating her insanely delicious Mexican food that she was right. I mean, if a Chinese person can outdo the Mexicans in making Mexican food, what can't you do with practice? What can't be accomplished? You know? So anyway, that was a little restaurant called Taco Ole. Unfortunately, they sold that restaurant, and the guy that took it over later, apparently, I mean, the economy turned down. You know, he may have been very good at his marketing and stuff, but the economy turned down, and he went away. So I always really like that little restaurant. Very, very good. And strangest thing, you know, you go into a Mexican restaurant, and everyone behind the counter is Chinese, and they make really, really great Mexican food. I thought that was brilliant. It's like something out of a Get Smart movie. That's why I wanted to eat there. Anyway, okay, so, you know, obviously today, very low volatility, very quiet market. We'll see if the market can try to get up from this level to a little bit higher that we're talking about earlier. On the weekly chart, if you want to take a quick look at your weekly chart, you don't have to throw it up, Duane, unless you want to. If the week were to have closed right now, this is kind of, in candlestick charting, this would be called a doji or something very close to a doji. Is that not correct, Wayne?
Let me go look at the weekly chart. And
It is correct. I was just giving you the courtesy of telling me I was right. So,
this guy here?
Yeah. This current week.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be called a...
It's doji-ish. And that would be an early sign for a potential top here. And what I like about this, you know, we still have 1 week. You know, next week is the 1 week late. But what I like about this also, about this particular setup, is that this is a reasonable place for the market if it closes on Friday, as an example, below 1230, which it may or may not. We're only 9 points away. But let's say that it did. That would be the first reasonable place for a short position to be initiated. You have a top based on a weekly top coming in. You have the candlestick chart. If you believe in and use candlesticks, that's fine. But more importantly, you have a very large force, the monthly, being stopped by a moderate-sized force, which is the weekly. That's reasonable. I can believe in that. I don't think the monthly is going to be stopped by your 60-minute top. I don't think the monthly bottom is going to be stopped by your 120-minute top. I don't think the monthly is going to be stopped by anything except something of size. And here we are with a week that is the on-time week for a top. That's reasonable. That would be the first time you might consider, and that's what I was telling people last week, not only on the radio program, but some of our other people that call in. Don't short the thing, because we need to go up into next week. Whatever those numbers are, we need to go higher. And we're there now, and that is a reasonable, at least beginning point, to start saying, well, you know, in the same way that we had a quarterly top second quarter of this year that then declined down to a monthly bottom. See, quarterly is larger than monthly, but monthly is pretty big. And so that's reasonable to think that you're going to get a decent bounce off that, and certainly we have. Well, now we have a monthly bottom that's being touched or counter-trended, attempted to, by a weekly top. That's also reasonable. That's how it works. So think about this. All of this is just forces at work. You know, we talked about this the other day, behind everything is just mere forces of positive and negative at work. The expression, the manifestation, how it plays out in actual life, whether that force is a one bug beetle trying to eat another one, or whether that force is, I said this last time, the bark beetle trying to chew down the trees, or a forest fire burning down the trees. All that really is a manifestation of a very basic thing happening. Two forces are at work. And one of them is being countered by the other force. And we see that very beautifully played out in the markets all the time. And that's what this is. These are forces at work. That's the very basic thesis of what's happening, not only in the markets, but just in everyday life. Certainly for you to get up and go get your food out of the microwave oven, you're going to have to put a force against another force. You've got gravity pulling you down. You're going to have to use your electrical energy to trigger your muscles and stand up and walk over there. That's a force against a force, and on and on and on and on and on. So the market is expressing this very, very basic ancient principle at work. Large and small forces working against each other. And reflected wave gives you a very beautiful, really elegant way to detect what force is working against what force. And to be able to not only know that, but amazingly enough, predict when those forces are going to come into play as tops or bottoms. That's why, I know it sounds like a salesman, that's why you should come to the Reflected Wave seminar if you have an interest in learning how to do that. Because, and our seminar is on November 12th and 13th. This is our last seminar for the year. And we're going to use many examples of types, turns, tops, and bottoms that have occurred throughout the year in many, many different markets that will show the principle at work. It's very easy to understand it when you see it the way that it's laid out, because Reflected Wave does use an indicator to automatically identify all of this for you. So that's something for you to consider. I know many of you have gone to it and are working with Reflected Wave, and for people who do go to that, I'm available after the seminar, not immediately right then and there, but you know, for months and months and months. It's virtually unlimited. The people can contact me, and we talk about setups and trades, including during the day, where we can watch the stuff happen in real time, not just after the fact. I would be a little wary of any system that always wants to review their performance purely after the fact, not in real time. The reason for that is because it's after the fact. It's very easy to see what happened once it happened. And those people would say, well, you know, you would have gone short here, you would have bought back here, you know, it makes it very easy, and it's very tempting, but it's not real. You know, the real and the tempting are two different subject matters. And so it's very good sometimes, I mean, because we really do have to trade in real time, it's very good to do this stuff in real time as well. So for Reflected Wave students of ours, they can call up and we do this in real time. We'll take a look at what the markets are doing and make suggestions right in real time for what they would do and how they would act at certain price levels, because it doesn't look the same until it's done. After it's done, people get very excited about things. But before it's done, people aren't so excited. And then finally, when the market starts to move, let's say the thing calls a bottom and it finally does move up, then they're very excited. But before that, people aren't anywhere near as excited when you're saying, well, this is where you'd be buying it, right here, because it's probably going to go right up to here. Yeah, that sounds good, but, you know, you're putting your money on the line. It's a whole different thing when you haven't seen it played out in advance. And so be careful when you're looking, if you're looking to buy something, and Dwayne and I both make a very good effort to not overly use the past already happened stuff. We try to show stuff. I give out forecasts all the time on the program. His system, he's trading it in real time in the morning. Michael is doing that. These are things that a lot of that you would want to have. Put it this way, rather than say something bad about anybody, that's what you would want to have. You would want to know that the stuff works in real time to try to be of use to you. So
very
keep
well
that in
said.
Mind.
And you know, yeah. And you also have to be careful. And you know, I'm going to say this again. I've written about it. I've talked about it on the show. But there is software out there today that allows people to make what appear to be real-time live market videos after the fact. I mean, and this software was not created for criminal purposes. The market replay software was created to help a person learning to trade be able to practice their setups. Maybe you have a day job, so you can't watch the market in the daytime, and you want to watch it a couple hours at night. You want to see it played out tick by tick, just as it did in real time. Well, unfortunately, if you slap that together with some screen recording software, then a guy can make himself look like a genius pretty easily. Okay, so don't be hoodwinked just because somebody's website has some videos of some guy killing it on video in the market, trade after trade after trade. You know, you need to go into that trading room or whatever kind of environment they offer, and you need to see him actually do it live in real time, when you can look over at your own charts and go, okay, price really is at 1200 right now, and this guy says he's going to buy the market, and you can then see on your own chart if the market really does go up 27 points. I'm just telling you guys, there's an awful lot of that out there. And so I just want you to be careful. That's all.
You could show up at their offices with a fire extinguisher strapped to your chest and then just, you know, quickly spray it as people approach you, you know, at them as well. I'm not sure why you would do that. It just seemed like a good visual, you know. After you find out that they've been doing that silly thing with the movies, making themselves look like they're geniuses. I've always liked that idea. Maybe two or three fire extinguishers, so when one is depleted, you just put your hand on the next handle and you're ready to go again.
Okay.
You know, you could be in the offices for quite some time. Anyway, do you want to move on from the S&P a little bit? So weekly top.
Yeah, let's move on. But Patrick has a question for you. With the PageTrader subscription, you have a turning point calendar that calls daily tops or bottoms. Do you plan on doing a monthly turning point calendar at some point?
I don't know. We might. Thank you for the question. It's perfectly reasonable. Right now, because we're teaching Reflected Wave and we have a seminar for it, people will be able to do that for themselves. And I realize that not everybody who's a Reflected Wave person would necessarily be a Messenger Pro person as well. It's possible that we would do that. But part of what I'm doing with really our the training that we're doing with Reflected Wave is dramatically different in philosophy and in many other ways than our product, Messenger Pro. And Messenger Pro doesn't necessarily use Reflected Wave in every trade. It certainly doesn't. And the Turning Point calendar is there just for the shorter term. See, most of the people don't consider the monthly that important. And even if we tell them about it, they don't realize its importance. It's going to take some time. And maybe I think the people on the show are learning from both Dwayne and I the value of all the different time frames and their meanings. But when a monthly bottom is put in, that's a very powerful piece of information to know. So your question's very fair. Shouldn't we have a calendar for that? It won't make much of a difference to people who are day trading. To them, it won't make much of a difference. And I'm not going to be driving around the country in a van telling people to, you know, pay attention to the larger time frames, nor the world's coming to the end. By the way, speaking of the world coming to the end, I do have bad news for everyone. The world, according to one man, is going to end on the 21st of October.
Yeah, and he's really very adamant about it this time. Since his earlier prediction this year, Harold Camping, since the original prediction that didn't come to pass, he's suffered a stroke. He's better now. And
he's feeling much better about the ending of the world now.
Well, here's the thing, is he says that although it didn't happen in the manner that he thought it would happen with the rolling earthquakes.
It still happened. I know. This is President Obama in action. But I'm still right. I'm still right.
He says that, you know, it really did happen. And that on the 21st, which is, what, 3 days from now?
Yeah. It's over.
Potentially, I may not see my 52nd birthday, according to Harold.
No. Listen, you won't have to watch the larger time frames either, because there won't be any.
Okay.
It's all over on the 21st.
Speaking of smaller time frames, Bob has a question for you. With the hourly, we've just got a new hourly candle. With the hourly closing and not getting to 1226, what do you think about that?
Well, a couple quick things. First of all, the 1226 isn't out of the question yet. This is for your listeners. This is something that we had put out earlier today, that the normal position for the market would be a test of 1226 in this current hour. But they're very, very quiet here. We got up to 1223. That certainly doesn't count. And the market is drifting lower. I'll need to watch a little bit further here before I make any really good judgment about what they're going to do here, but it's not over yet that they haven't done 26 yet. We're in a 1 hour late period here. It's possible they could either do it in this hour or begin the move from this hour. Today also is even though you know, today is very low volatility, and I'm going to give the market a little more leeway here in order to see what they're going to do here. But if it doesn't touch it, then it is, it just didn't happen. And that's just something that sometimes will happen. The market just cannot touch any target because of the volatility, as an example. That can happen. But we're still in the 1 unit late here. So like I said, we would either be bottoming at this point, then to turn and go up, or possibly even do it in this hour. So we have some time left here. We had a trade that we were setting up to buy the market, but I didn't, and we just canceled it just a short while ago while we were talking here. I wasn't crazy about the way the market was trading here. Most systems, most setups work better with normal to high volatility, and we don't have that. I think we have low volatility today. So let's see what happens. You know, I've seen all kinds of things. We all have seen all kinds of things go on in the market. Let's give them a little more time here. I don't have any other really important forecasts to give other than all of us are going to be gone in 3 days. So other than that, I'm sorry I make so much fun of the guy, but at this point, you know, I just want to remind people, this is a guy who sincerely believed what he was saying.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
Yeah,
I'm not taking
really
that
did.
From him.
Yeah.
He sincerely believed it. But he's neurotic. He got onto a track 30 years ago. He's an engineer. He got onto track where he believed that he was getting special messages from Jesus to investigate the Bible and find out the hidden secrets that God had implanted in the Bible for him to find, so that he could actually be the savior of humanity and let us all know exactly when the world's going to end. And so he spent the next 30 years, I've read all about the guy, even read portions of one of his books, and so I'm speaking from some understanding here. He just became an erotic about picking the date and believing that there is a hidden code in the Bible that God, the same God, by the way, that wrote that Ten Commandments. You've read the Ten Commandments, of course. It's not really complex.
It's very easy to read. I'm familiar with some of his work, yes.
Yeah, you're familiar with some of it. It's very easy to read. It doesn't require a scholar to tell you what he means. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not covet, you know, somebody's wife. On and on and on. That doesn't need a scholar. But that same God hid in the Bible under all kinds of different mathematical means and dates and times and stuff. And people get neurotic about this. I'm sorry. That's just what this is. This is a guy who needs counseling. He went off the deep end about trying to figure out and thinking that Jesus was directing him to places in the Bible where he could figure out that the world was going to end on such and such a date. He's made numerous predictions in the past, and he's going to continue. If his life was extended by another 50 years, he's going to continue to do that same thing. He's going to keep coming up with new dates based on his original assumption that Jesus spoke to him and told him that there's hidden things in the Bible and that he needs to be the guy that goes finds that stuff and then tells everybody about the world ending.
Now, this would be the same Jesus that said, no man shall know the day or hour, not even me.
Right.
No one.
And yet he'll find something else. And that's the problem.
That was probably the most obvious thing to me is that, I mean, that's a scripture that, you know, I had the benefit of growing up in a home. My grandmother took me to church. And, I mean, I remember that from one of my earliest Sunday school classes is that, you know, it's right there. It's not hidden. You don't need any kind of a code book to break it down. Jesus simply says, no man shall know the day or the hour. I don't even know myself. Nobody but God knows, the Father. And,
right.
I mean, it's just... And so, this guy, you know... I feel kind of sorry for him. I mean, let's face it, the first failed prophecy here. Well, actually, this wasn't the first. This was the second failed prophecy of his.
The third.
Though this past one was the third?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So
he wrote a book, and yeah, he's had three rounds of this.
So it resulted in a stroke. I mean, let's face it, if the world doesn't end for the rest of us on the 21st, I feel sorry for the guy, but I got a feeling it'll probably end for him. Because,
well,
I mean, his health is
not
good. No, I mean, he's an elderly guy, and, you know, when the whole world is watching, and you're, I mean, like David Williams, if you say price is going to go to $12.26, and a few people listen to the radio program go, well, it didn't happen. No big deal.
Right.
You go on with your life, you go get some sushi for lunch, since you can't get Taco Olay anymore.
Well, that's a problem unto itself. But please,
but when you have millions watching and waiting, and I mean, you're very accurate. You know, the earthquakes are going to start here at exactly this time, and you know, yes, God understands time zones, so it's going to start here, and it's going to be a rolling thing, and across. I mean, and then when that doesn't happen, boy, you got to be pretty thick-skinned for that not to have a very profound effect on you.
Yeah. It becomes a disorder. You have to look at this. I'm sorry. I mean, I know he's very scholarly, and it's, you know, I know he, you know, loves the religion and loves God and all the things that you could say good about him.
Yeah.
It's a disorder. He has a mental problem.
Right.
He needs to get counseling or have something. He has been, and he'll probably continue to be on this track where he keeps thinking that there is, you know, deeply hidden secrets in the Bible that are going to tell him and him alone, you know, this is almost a mental illness at this point. And I mentioned that the first time for his May date and all that stuff. I do want to mention also, this is not to beat these people up, but just as the mere fact that it is, there have now been over 100 people in the last century that have made, that have been people of name and of report that have come out with very much the same kind of thing, where they believed that they were being spoken to, that they were getting special signals, indications from on high, and that they were being directed to places in the Bible. And, you know, all 100 of them were wrong. Hmm. All about the ending of life on Earth, or all about very, very big things that were going to happen. And the strange thing is that in this last century, there's only been one man who has made a library filled with, I've mentioned this before, of course, of predictions that have, in the vast majority of cases, come true. Not just one prediction for the ending of Earth, but all kinds for stock market, mental things, diseases that people had, dates and times for presidents to be shot, all kinds of forecasts and predictions that have come true. His name was Edgar Cayce. And Edgar said that anybody could do what he did. Now, Edgar probably was wrong about that because we don't have a lot of people doing that.
He didn't have an apprentice. He didn't leave, Edgar Jr. behind. So,
but he was the real deal, and he was doing it without having to have special incantations or special indications from on high. He was doing it in some other way. And so it gives you some hope that, these things are accessible. The future is accessible in some ways, as if we really need to know it anyway. But let's just say that, maybe you did want to know it, or maybe there was some way to, here it is. We really do have a fact. You can't argue with a fact. The 100 guys that thought that they were being spoken to were all wrong. That's a fact. And here's a guy who's made thousands of predictions. One man. Who the vast majority of them have been correct or mostly correct, mm-hmm. including the discovery of the underground Atlantis, what thought was to be Atlantis, and I'm not sure where that went, but that was in 1940 something, and a whole slew of them. I mean, they just go on and on and on. I mean, at some point you just walk away and you just have to shrug your shoulders. So I kind of like the fact, in a way, that this guy is just doing it with some other means. He's not. In other words, it's kind of in us already on some level to be able to do what Edgar Cayce did. I mean, he was an ordinary man for the most part. If you take a look at him, he was certainly somebody you wouldn't notice in the generic vegetable section at Vons. Just an ordinary looking guy. But he was able to lie down on a couch and go into kind of a sleep or a trance or something and be able to access this information. It's just very interesting. And
most of his life, he taught Sunday school.
What's that?
I said, and most of his life, he taught Sunday school.
And that's the other thing. Yeah, he did teach Sunday school. So he was a
along with being the
Sunday
sleeping prophet, they called him.
Because that's the what sleeping he called prophet.
Him, instead of being very mystical and go, okay, I'm going to go into a trance now, he literally would lay down on the couch, take a nap, and diagnose people of illnesses and all this kind of
right.
stuff. And then on
exactly.
Sunday morning, he would be back in Sunday school teaching. I mean, he was an extraordinary guy, but yet a very
yes.
ordinary guy.
Right, exactly. And if you trade on Globex and your position goes in your favor, well, then you could make a sleeping prophet because you would wake up later and the thing would be higher. All right.
That
let's
happened
move on
to me
market.
Sunday night. It did.
You're good. I'm glad for you. I did want to take a quick look at gold and a couple other things really briefly here. Just if you wouldn't mind, let's take a quick look at the daily gold chart.
Sure.
We had originally forecast that the 14th of October was going to be important. If you would put up a daily chart of ordinary this, you can see this is a good example
ordinary
of
ordinary gold on a daily chart.
Okay.
I'm sure it doesn't look anything like yours, but...
I know. You're just waiting for me to say that, aren't you? No, it looks just fine.
It's a daily
chart.
It's
a very
beautiful
chart of daily gold, and
now,
I just want to hand it to
it
you.
Is
you
the
have
Globex.
Some of the nicest charts I've seen for daily gold.
Thank you very much. It is a Globex session, so it
that's okay.
Might
we're
different.
Including that. This, if that's fine, Dwayne. Okay. We include this in it. I just want to point out, so if you put your cursor on the 14th of October, one over to the left.
Right
there you go. So on that date, the market would normally be testing 1646 to 1644. And we, of course, forecast this on the radio program prior to that date. And as you can see, one day late, thank you, yeah, that's good. That's popping up there. One day late, the very next trading day, the market made a top and reversed off that top, then to run down and complete the 1446 to 4. And you can see today, we're testing both those levels. We tested it yesterday and spiked below it. But this is an example of how the market can do some of these things. The other fellow asked, well, it looked like it failed. But no, it actually, another little interim cycle was in there that made, instead of making the date of the 14th the date where the price would occur on, that was the date effectively, plus or minus a day, that the move to run to that price began. So ultimately, the market needed to go down, as I said on the program, 3 or 4 days before all this occurred. The market would, under its natural conditions, wants to go down to 1646 to 1644 on or around the 14th of October. And so the market now has done that. That's the natural position for it. And I stressed that it, worst case, would do it a couple of days afterwards. And it's certainly 2 days afterwards it went down and did that. I'm not Edgar Cayce. I didn't have to go into a trance for that. It's just, although some people would say by listening to me, they've fallen into a trance, wishing that I would stop so they could get back to their daily life. But this is one of the benefits of having that knob on your radio where you can just turn it right off. Anyway, the fact is that there was a very important cycle at work here that would, I know this sounds bad, but would almost demand that the market would have to go down and do this. And this is when they get to that kind of certainty, that's when I come out with this stuff. In this particular case, it started the move down and on that date and basically completed it and is testing it now. So the importance now is how they handle this level. As you know, we had a weekly bottom several weeks back in gold, and they did have about a 90-point advance. 90 points in gold is a decent move. You wouldn't be able to get all 90. You might be able to get a third of that, you know, if you're okay at trading, which is still okay. That's fine. You know, it's not a competition. You know, this is something for you to just improve your skills and get better and better at it, not in relation to other people's skills, but just on your own, just to see if you can improve your trading. Let other people inspire you. If they're better than you in something, rather than competing with them, let them be an inspiration to you to show you that there are other things that can be done, and then work your way around that. But if you turn it into a competition, then you end up, what do you end up doing? You end up doing wrong things because you want to be in the competition and win. And that's not the right way to trade in the market. The right way to trade is to have very little concern about anything else except a high probability setup, and then make your very best efforts to get into that high probability setup and then manage the risk. All the stuff we've talked about so many times. How the market handles this test now that we're doing this 1646 to 1644 level will help us make our next move in gold. We did have some, our last forecast for a bottom was October 4th and 5th, the same low, by the way, that occurred, you know, the same forecast that we made for the S&P on the 4th for a bottom there. And the gold did not rally anything like the S&P did. So how they handle this level now is going to be important. We may have a forecast for gold before Friday for another reversal. Other than the little tricky little sachet they did for the 14th and then come down like that, gold has really been a pretty good market in terms of our way of looking at the markets. And gold is driven by very, very large forces, very large time frames, because anything that can move a market 1,000 points beyond its old $900 high, that's not being driven by your five-minute chart. It's being driven by something very, very big and powerful, something that many platforms can't measure. You can't actually measure it. You can't go back far enough. You don't have large enough time frames. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I'm saying? You don't have 5-year bars, 10-year bars, which would really be necessary in order to properly measure some of these larger, the metal cycles are very big. So anyway, so that's gold. So they're completing that and doing that, and we'll talk about this a little bit later as we get into the week a little bit further. Today's Wednesday. It may even take us into next week. I did mention also that a weekly top had been formed in gold on the week of October 10th. This week made a slight new high and then caused this decline. I would like to, as I mentioned on the program, I would like to see this week close above 1627. If they do, that's further indication that higher prices will likely be coming, and we will take action on that, and we'll talk about that as we move into next week as well. Let's also talk about the euro, because that's something that has some importance. Let me get to the euro. I've mentioned a couple times during the week here that October 21st is going to be an important date for the euro, and I mentioned on the program that I wanted to see daily closes anyway for a little bit here above, I think I talked about 136.92 or something, and they have been closing above that. The 21st for the euro is a... it's a pretty good volatility cycle. And so if we do get a couple of things coming together on that date, price levels and some other things on that date, then we would be using that to take advantage of the euro. And, you know, nothing is really settled out in Europe right now. In Greece, you know, there's pigs running in the streets, there's fires burning, there's people screaming. Oh, now why are they doing that, Dwayne? Why are people so upset in Greece? Why are the people running in the street? I'll answer it for you.
Okay.
Because the government spent too much money, and there ain't no money left. That's why the government, that's why the people are running in the streets of Greece. Everything's collapsing. Their economy collapsed because they spent too much money. And now everyone's going to have to take a hit of some kind in order to put things back together. And no one wants to take that hit because it hurts. You're going to have to sacrifice. You're going to have, all these people are going to have to sacrifice this, that, and the other. And jobs are gone. You know, the whole thing. Does that, any of that sound familiar?
Yep.
Yeah, does sound familiar.
All too familiar.
When the government spends too much money, whether you're Democrat or Republican, the fact is when the government spends too much money, then you run out of money. And when you run out of money and programs don't work anymore and the economy's bad, then suddenly people are running in the street and fires are burning.
Unless
and
you're
it's right
States,
in front of us.
Then you just print more money.
Yeah. But even printing more money isn't going to do it, and they're going to need to be bailed out, and they haven't been bailed out yet completely. You don't have to imagine what's going to happen to America if we get four more years of spending stimulus money and zillion and renaming things that so that it doesn't look like a stimulus, so that it is a stimulus, just more excuses to keep spending more and more money so that our debt just keeps going up and up and up. You don't have to imagine what it's going to be like here in America, do you? All you have to do is turn your TV on and look at Greece and look at Europe, look at Portugal, look at some
yeah,
of these places.
I saw the pictures of Greece this morning and what's going on in the streets there. It truly is horrific.
It is horrific. I mean, you don't have to imagine it. There it is. There is America's future if we continue doing what we're doing now.
That we have right now, this Occupy Wall Street thing, that's child's play. That's a fairy tale compared
yeah.
to what's going on in Greece. I mean, it's really bad, guys.
Yeah, it's really bad, and
sure
it gets that way from spending too much money
to
and having no
sure.
way to pay it off. That's how it got that way, by having too many programs, too many government employees, too much money going, too much government, too much regulation, all the things that we're doing here in America. That's how it ends, right there in front of you. Sorry, but that's how it ends. And it's right in front of us. It's like watching your future right on your TV. Turn your TV on to see your future. There it is. And I'm telling you, think, even if you are Democrat or you know, like this president, we're 3 years into this now. Seriously consider whether you want to vote for somebody who still to this day, if he had his way, would want to spend another $1 trillion or $2 to get the economy going, because he believes that government is what makes the economy grow. And he's wrong. He doesn't know what he's doing. It's quite obvious. Yes, he's under an enormous, already existing downslide that he stepped into. We understand that. We give that to him. Everything he has tried has failed. All of it. All the numbers are going in the wrong direction. They've been going in the wrong direction for 27 out of the last 29 months on every single measurable way. Okay, he doesn't have it right. He's not going to suddenly get a brain and get it right. He's just the wrong guy for the job. I'm not even going to discount. I'm not going to say he's a bad guy or anything like that. Just the wrong guy.
So what you're really saying is that maybe Harold is right after all.
Maybe Harold is right. I just want to say this. Your future and America's future is right on your TV right now if something doesn't change in America with regard to how we handle these problems. If you think spending more money and spending trillions of it and causing, you know, getting more and more debt, more and more debt, more and more debt is going to make everything better, look on your TV, because that's exactly what Greece did. That's exactly how they got to where they are today. Find me wrong. Go check it out for yourself. Big entitlement programs, constant growth of government, everyone trying to, you know, feed out of the trough of the government, and now it just all comes crashing down. So over the weekend, I'm bringing this up because of the euro. The euro may have a very sizable move coming because over this weekend or in the next week or so, there may be another decision about whether or not they're going to be bailed out. Someone's going to have to bail them out. Otherwise, then what happens? Then it's just pure anarchy over there. And by the way, certain banks in America are connected to Greece and Europe. And if that goes upside down, you know, God knows what those connections are, but, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to have some of your money maybe in a really safe place, like under your bed. Because some of those banks, you know, if it doesn't work out for Greece, if they don't get their bailout, I would worry about the banks themselves and those, you know, this is an interconnected world. So I don't want to scare people into making a run on the banks. I don't mean to do that. But personally, it worries me that, you know, no one could make the argument that everything is great and happy and that somebody couldn't give you some practical advice. And that practical advice is you might want to check out the connection between your bank. Why not walk into your bank and say, what's your connection to Greece? Could I speak to the manager, please? How is this bank connected to what's happening in Greece? What are your subsidiaries or whatever that are over there? And if Greece just blows up, which it already is, but if it continues to blow up, is that going to hurt the bank? And will you put that in writing for me? You know.
Yeah, chances are.
Or should I just pull my money out?
Yeah, the chances are the guy behind the counter doesn't.
No, that's not the guy that's going to know. You need to make some noise about it, but and then just look at him right in the eye and say, listen. If you give me a bad feeling here, I'm taking $316 and I'm leaving. Something like that. They'll think twice. They'll think twice. Believe me.
And I want it in small bills.
I want it in small bills. Yeah. Go to the trouble. I want all ones. I want all pennies. 316 in pennies. Put it together in pennies for me. Anyway, I'm serious. I'm worried about that because banks are all connected and, you know, just it might be if you have. I mean, everybody's money is valuable. You just be careful with what's going on here. And so the euro is going to reflect whatever goes on over the next week or two with regard to who's going to bail them out, how they're going to get bailed out, is Germany going to do it, this, that, and the other. And it's a sizable, it's a pretty big thing. So we'll watch that as it goes on. I've already gone to my bank and asked that very question. I didn't get a really clear answer. So I'm with Wells Fargo, so I'm still there. I didn't take my 316 out yet, but, you know, Wells Fargo happens to be one of the banks that didn't get involved in all of the stuff with the housing and all that stuff. They just said, no, if you can't afford the house, you can't get a loan, you know. So they saved themselves from that problem. They were smart enough to not get involved in that. Okay, so the euro for the 21st, so we'll see. That's only a couple days away here. The 21st is actually Friday. So, and I think that's all we have right now. This is the stuff we've been talking about for a few days here, and nothing really has changed from our original outlook on that. So there you go, Duane. I think that's everything I have for today.
Okay.
In the S&P, we're moving a little lower here. Let me just take a quick look at a couple of quick things here.
well, we ran down, hit that trend line I drew, and kind of bounced off of that. And now if that breaks, we've got the zone there at 11.12. And if 11.12 gives way, there's nothing really to prevent us, and from what I've got, to go back and test the lows of Monday night and Tuesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, there's just nothing there. It's in a big air pocket.
Yeah. Okay, well, Duane, I think that's it. We'll wait until tomorrow. We'll see how this plays out. Very quiet. You know, if you want to practice in the market, this is not a bad day to do it because this kind of slow, quiet behavior could be very easy for you to get your feet wet if you're new, holding real-time positions and all that stuff. You might check that out. And, Duane, thanks for having me on the program. Always
Thank
a pleasure.
You, David.
I'll plan on seeing with talking with you tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Bright and early.
We'll see you then.
Okay, thanks again.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Comes a new
Okay, guys, that's going to wrap it for me, too. As Bob just pointed out, the Beige Book on the way out. And I think I just saw a headline scroll that said something about better than expected. I don't know that you can quantify the Beige Book in such a manner. The Beige Book comes out. These guys on TV, they talk about the World Series. Okay. Don't go there for help. Anyway, the Beige Book will come out, and it'll either make a splash or it won't. What do we got? Dow positive for the year. I'm not seeing anything on the headlines about the Beige Book as of yet. So, we'll talk about it tomorrow. All right, that's going to do it. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.